Good morning and thank you, Your Honors. My name is Mike Frazier, registration number 23189. I'm here on behalf of the appellant Park and Cart Services.
You can run the lectern down if that would be more comfortable. There's a switch behind you.
Thank you, Your Honor. The reason we're here, Your Honor, is because the appellee in this case successfully argued to the district court that the indemnification clauses in this contract covered their leaky roof system in our parking services sweeping agreement. The district court specifically stated that the jury found that the plaintiff's fall was caused in part by ice that was formed on the sidewalk, by Safeway's leaking roof, it froze, and the plaintiff, Ms. Clara Lane, fell. And in fact, that we know the jury apportioned 70% of Safeway for that roof system. Now, of course, it would seem unusual under most circumstances that a contract to sweep and power wash a parking lot would require that vendor to insure Safeway's roofing system from negligent repair and maintenance. And so under those circumstances, the indemnity clauses would have to be clear and unequivocal that that's what we intended to do, Park and Cart Services intended to do.
Where do you say there's a finding that the indemnification related to a leaking roof? Where is such a finding found in the record?
Well, the court specifically said in its order on indemnification, court file 287 through 290, it stated in the present controversy first paragraph, when it was dealing with the indemnification, the court must also infer the jury found that the plaintiff's fall was caused in part, and I went on to say it. I tried to state it specifically, and then it applied the indemnification clause, one of the indemnification clauses in the contract, to those specific instances. We believe where the court made its primary mistake, to get to the heart of the matter, was in not looking at the entire contract itself. What the district court did was it looked at one small section of the contract in Exhibit C and applied that specific indemnity clause to determine that the vendor was responsible for the leaking roof. In order to briefly give some context on why and how the entire contract should be interpreted, I want to first summarize the contract itself. It consists of a primary contract that is the first several pages, and that contains one of the three indemnity clauses we're going to talk about. And in that primary contract, in Section 2A, the district court found, we believe properly found, that Park and Cart Services is not required to indemnify the Safeway for its negligence as related to the leaky roof. It had to deal with our own negligence, Park and Cart's own negligence. When you look at that first part of this four-part contract, that primary agreement is signed by both parties. It deals with issues like OSHA, insurance, use of names and logos by the parties. It has an integration clause, all the typical things you would see in a primary contract. And that Section 2A, which deals with the indemnity clause, it doesn't apply to us, as the district court found, with regard to us indemnifying Safeway for its own negligence. Then you have three exhibits, attachments to the contract.
Exhibit, does it apply to the part of the negligence, you call it negligence, but okay, the fault attributable to Park and Cart?
I mean, it does. It does apply to us, right, but we shouldn't have to indemnify Safeway for its own negligence under 2A.
Okay, and what was the amount of fault that is due to Safeway's quote-unquote own negligence?
70%.
How do you know that?
The jury determined that.
How do you know that this fault attributed to Safeway doesn't come from not putting out orange cones, not putting out signs, not hiring a parking car in the first place? The jury made no findings specific that the fault of Safeway was due to a leaking roof.
Well, that's you're right, Your Honor. It did. The jury just did specifically find that. There was evidence submitted at trial that was the case, and the district court who was there believed that was one of the reasons. But irregardless of whether it's the leaky roof or Safeway not putting out cones, the indemnity clause deals specifically with Safeway's negligence. We believe it was attributed to the roof. But you're correct. There was no special interrogatory. So getting back to Exhibit A is entitled Parking Lot Sweeping. It describes the services we're supposed to perform. It also contains an indemnity clause, and the district court properly found that doesn't apply to parking. Exhibit B is entitled Sweeping Maintenance Specifications. It has no indemnity provision whatsoever. It describes what we're supposed to do with regard to our sweeping services. Then we have Exhibit C, which is what the court relied on.
Do your sweeping services, do they include blowing things off the parking lot as well?
They do. I think this language in that contract says blowing things off the parking lot.
And then why wouldn't power washing be a form of blowing things off the parking lot?
I think blowing implies air, where you have someone with a backpack blower. You see it also mentioned backpack blower in another part of the contract, where you have those guys that go with the backpack and they blow the dirt off, as opposed to water, which is a separate medium. But with regard to Exhibit C, where it contains the indemnity clause that this district court relied on, it has three paragraphs. First paragraph basically says, we park in carts, can't sue you for workers' comp. Two, we park in cart, we're going to get our own comp insurance, workers' comp insurance. And three, we're going to indemnify Safeway if they're comparatively negligent. Exhibit C is signed on a different date, only signed by my party. It's signed before the primary contract was signed. We believe when you look at the entire contract, that indemnity clause that the court relies on only applies to Workers' Compensation Act issues. And injured parking cart employees can't sue Safeway if one of them is partially responsible when you look at it in context.
So the first two paragraphs certainly refer to workers' comp or your employees being hurt.
That's right.
But the third one says all claims or causes of action of any sort arising out of or in connection with the performance of this contract or agreement. Pretty broad language. And doesn't refer back in any way to paragraphs one or two. So why do you say it applies only to injuries to parking car employees?
You're right, Your Honor. It doesn't apply. It doesn't refer back to the other three, but they're there in concert in a separate exhibit. One of the cases, and I'll rely on one of the cases cited by plaintiff, which is Boulder Plaza. It had three indemnity clauses in one of its contracts. And what the court said in that case was, when you have these three indemnity clauses, you can't use one of the indemnity clauses to render the other two meanings, which is what happened here. If you take this separate section, Exhibit C, and apply it to the other two indemnity clauses, especially the master agreement to the front, you've rendered it meaningless.
And is it meaningless because they're inconsistent? They can't be harmonized? Is that why they're meaningless?
It's meaningless because you have to substitute the language regarding the indemnity portions of it. Because the way to read it, also according to Boulder Plaza, is you have to look at the context in which those indemnity clauses are written. In Boulder Plaza, they looked at a separate indemnity clause and said, oh, this clearly applies in this section of the contract to personal injury claims.
The language said that.
In the Boulder Plaza.
So making a parallel to this case, why couldn't we say that the indemnity agreement in Exhibit C applies when Safeway has some negligence, kind of like in this case, as the judge did? This one applies in a situation when Safeway has some negligence. The one in paragraph A to A of the main one doesn't necessarily apply when Safeway has negligence. It says as a result of willful or negligent conduct, I think, by parking car.
Right.
So those two indemnity agreements seem to apply in two different situations, akin to the situation that the court found in Boulder Plaza.
Well,
why am I wrong?
I think when you, there are three, all three, the language in all three is different. And the way to all three indemnity clauses is different.
In this contract.
In three separate sections. So when I sign this master agreement and I see that I'm only responsible for my own negligence, why would I go back and look at Exhibit C, which predated it, and say that Exhibit C, which applies to these specific circumstances, when I saw Exhibit C as a single document? Now that's going to override the other two ones that were specifically written differently and negotiated.
Because C actually provides more protection for parking cars. If the accident occurs as a result of Safeway's sole negligence, parking cart's off the hook, right?
Parking cart's off the hook for its sole negligence, and the other two as well. Because the first two only deal with indemnification for parking cart's own negligence. So we, in C, we've taken on comparative fault of Safeway, but we haven't, and it specifically spells out more expressly in Exhibit C that they have their own sole negligence issues, but it's implicit in the other ones because it doesn't address them.
Okay. I want to ask you some questions. I think this is very related. Do you have a problem with the court rejecting the proposed verdict form? What was the point of that verdict form? What were you trying to accomplish there that the verdict form didn't accomplish?
I wasn't the trial court attorney, okay. Your Honor, but I believe the point was to try and have a special interrogatory to some extent so we could understand if it was related specifically to power washing, which would deal with our issue. One of the issues was the motion for summary judgment, whether that's one of the terms of the contract.
No, the special verdict form asked, the special verdict form added a question that said, assess the percentage of fault that is due to pre-existing condition. The verdict form didn't define pre-existing condition, did it?
I don't believe so.
And there was no jury instruction to define pre-existing condition.
I don't believe so.
What was Parking Art getting at when it asked the jury to make a finding of fault related to a pre-existing condition?
Well, my apologies. I'm going to have to stand on my brief, Your Honor. I don't know how to answer that specific question.
Oh, okay.
With the limited time I have left, Your Honor, I believe that I would like to say, address specifically that the costs and fees were somehow taken from the first two indemnity clauses and applied to the third, which again shows that this court was taking specific sections of each indemnity clause and applying them, which is inconsistent with the reading separately in the context in which they should have been read.
Didn't you say a few minutes of each one covered a different situation?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why can't you have liability for indemnification under C and fees under the one in Exhibit A, the second one?
Because in order to do so, you have to negate the first part of the first indemnity clause and substitute Exhibit C's indemnity clause regarding comparative negligence and then add the fees.
Was the one under which fees were awarded, was that the one that said willful and wanton conduct? Oh, counsel, don't worry about it. I'll
look. Okay, thank you. Finally, I only have a couple minutes left. I'd like to briefly address the statute. We believe it's void under the comparative negligence statute. Power washing is maintenance.
You're talking about construction?
Construction is defined in the statute.
Right. No, you said comparative negligence statute. But I think
it's a comparative fault. It's a comparative fault statute that says a construction contract, a contract like this would be void for public policy reasons.
Yeah, okay.
The district court looked at it and said, well, this doesn't appear to be construction, but didn't carefully analyze, I believe, the definition of construction, which includes maintenance. Power washing is a piece of equipment. It blows at high pressure water, and it maintains the sidewalk by cleaning it. If you sandblast the side of an old building, the only difference is it's sand, it's not water, and everyone would agree that that's maintenance. Power washing is used as a prep to paint a building. The public policy...
I suppose power washing could be a step in a construction project, but here there's no construction.
The construction is defined as maintenance. It's maintaining the sidewalk. It's not a broom in a closet, it's not a mop in a bucket, it's a piece of equipment. You hired a vendor, it's equipment to blow the water on and maintain and keep that piece of building in repair. And I think the public policy, if anything, both in stated in that, in that statute, and also in this court's Dean of the Premises Liability Act cases, is when you have a building with a leaky roof, you have to be responsible for it. And it needs to be clear and unequivocal that I, as a person who sweeps or power washes your parking lot, knows I'm going to be responsible for your roof that I can't fix. And it takes three appellate judges and two lawyers to debate the reasonableness of this. It's not clear and unequivocal.
You're not trying to maintain the roof, though, are you? You're not power washing the roof.
No, sir. I'll save my brief 1 minute or less. Well, thank you.
Thank you. morning. My name is Ian Mitchell. I represent Safeway Inc. in this matter. My attorney registration number is 34877. I believe one of the main issues in this case is effectively that the appellant is misconstruing the court's March 27th order, in which they're stating that the Exhibit C is the only indemnification provision in which Park and Cart was required to hold Safeway harmless for their negligence as well as for Safeway's negligence. Specifically, the court noted in its March 27th order with regards to the first indemnification clause that under the terms of the indemnification clause number one, Park and Cart would be required to hold Safeway harmless from any such claim. In order to give effect of the plain meaning of that term, hold Safeway harmless, that includes Safeway's own negligence. That language included in the clause number one has been supported by a public service company, by Constable, and by Lafarge. And specifically, I believe that the Lafarge case is probably the most succinct and direct case on point.
So your position is that general indemnity language applies even if the claim arises from the indemnity's negligence?
That the language utilized in the indemnification clauses here, each one, 1, 2, and 3, fit within the requirements of public service company, Constable Lafarge, knowing the clear intent on the parties to shift the burden of risk to the indemnitor, in this case, Park and Cart. And that each one of the provisions fit within public services definition as found by the trial.
But in the end, having discussed clauses, what he calls clauses 1 and 2, the trial judge ultimately settles on clause 3 as being the applicable clause for this situation following the jury's verdict, does it not?
The judge does harmonize the clauses in terms of which clause handles in specific which situation. I don't think the judge actually necessarily needed to harmonize it in that way. Obviously, the review of the written contract is done de novo. But in this case, I don't think there's any reason why the court would write down that Park and Cart would be required to hold Safeway harmless from any such claim under the first clause, and then under the second clause, and then under the third clause, noting sufficiently that under the third clause, Safeway has provided Park and Cart with a less broad indemnification requirement, noting that Safeway is solely negligent for the incident or for the injury, then in that case, Park and Cart would not be required to indemnify Safeway.
But if the court says it's the third indemnification clause that's applicable, how do attorney fees and costs get awarded? Because that's only dealt with in the second or perhaps first indemnification clause.
Well, the indemnification obligation applies to holding Safeway harmless against any claims, causes of action in any sort arising out of the performance of the contract and agreement. It's my position that that hold harmless language includes the defense obligation, which incorporates the attorney's fees.
So your position is that the third indemnification clause would also cover attorney fees?
Yes, sir.
Did you have authority for that, counsel?
Where
a general indemnification clause, without explicitly mentioning attorney fees, covers attorney fees and costs?
Certainly, Your Honor. If you look at Lafarge, specifically the language contained in the provision that was determined in that case, it states to indemnify Lafarge against and save it harmless from any and all claims to liability for injuries, property, injuries to persons, including death, and from any other claims, suits, or liability on account of arising in whole or in part of any act or omission on the part of KECI or any of its officers, agents, employees, or servants.
And there's a ruling in that case from Lafarge that attorney fees and costs are encompassed within the indemnification obligation?
The ruling in that case is that based on that language that KECI owed Lafarge a duty to defend, and that the court properly awarded damages for the breach of that duty to defend.
Are we talking about damages here or costs? Attorney fees or costs?
Yeah. Under Farrell, Your Honor, it's relatively questionable. Our indemnity attorney's fees actually cost or actually damages, or is Farrell actually correct that it's a hybrid? We raised this issue in front of the trial court. I proceeded to attempt to present the attorney's fees as costs as damages for the breach of contract, breach of indemnification under our breach of contract, and both Park and Cart and the trial court determined that that issue should not be determined by the jury, that issue was an issue of attorney's fees and costs as a result of the litigation, as a result of a fee-shifting provision in the contract, and therefore not damages.
So LaFarge says it would have been damages. The trial court said we're not going to consider it damages. It's determined as a matter of costs.
LaFarge actually says that the court awarded LaFarge its attorney's fees for the failure of the duty to defend, for breaching the contract. It certainly is a hybrid problem, and it represents an issue in terms of presenting it.
So it's for a breach of a duty to defend, not necessarily a breach of an indemnification?
Well, the duty to defend is contained in this indemnification language, noting that it holds harmless. If you note in this LaFarge case, it doesn't say defend anyway. Even more interestingly, in this indemnification language contained in here, it doesn't say negligence.
Which one?
In the one in LaFarge, Your Honor. It actually doesn't say that KECI was to indemnify LaFarge due to KECI's negligence. But later in the opinion, the court specifically states that a finding of negligence on part of KECI is required in order to trigger the duty to indemnify. Now, Park and Cart has argued that the first clause in the contract refers to their negligence, and in some way that must limit their indemnification obligation to indemnify Safeway for its own negligence. How can indemnification obligation in LaFarge, which doesn't even mention KECI's negligence, not limit their ability to indemnify LaFarge for its own negligence? But in this instance, because we actually require some culpable conduct on the part of Park and Cart to indemnify even for our losses, that can somehow limit that clause in the first instance. Does that make sense? Does anybody have any questions about that one?
Go ahead.
Okay. Ultimately, it's our position that all three clauses should be read together and harmonized, and that when you harmonize it, you're supposed to look at the intent of the parties in terms of harmonizing. And that intent of the parties is to shift the burden of risk onto Park and Cart. It's not against public policy, and specifically in Colorado, when you have the Premises Liability Act, where you can't simply shift it legally with a delegable duty. You can't say, if you're performing work upon here, then you meet your negligence. The independent contractors, property owners, are afforded the opportunity to obtain indemnification, and it's clear from all three of these indemnification provisions that the intent of the parties to shift the burden.
Well, why don't you harmonize them for us if you can? What is the difference between the Exhibit C indemnification, which says all claims or actions arising out of the performance of the contract? It does include Safeway's negligence, or exclude Safeway's negligence as a coverage. Harmonize that with the one in paragraph 2A. What is the difference? When you say harmonize, are you saying that they cover three different situations, or all three of them are identical?
In this case, Your Honor, and ultimately to render none of them meaningless,
okay,
they have to be taken together. Ultimately, the second indemnification clause puts all of the second one that you're referring to, puts all the parties on notice that part of the indemnification language to hold Safeway harmless includes all costs, liability for attorney's fees arising out of claims, suits, or other proceedings made or brought against Safeway on account of its participation in this agreement. And said indemnification shall continue in effect after expiration or termination of this agreement.
That one has nothing to do with negligence, does it?
It certainly does. It states that if a claim arises, if it arises out of a claim, suit, or proceeding made or brought against Safeway on account of its participation in the agreement.
Could be a claim for breach of contract.
Could be a claim for breach of contract.
What I'm saying, it doesn't seem like that one is restricted into negligence.
And
The third one does seem to be restricted to negligence. The third one is Safeway's negligence. And the first one seems to require willful or negligent conduct by somebody in order to cause Safeway to be liable. Either a parking car or maybe one of Safeway's employees, I don't know.
I certainly agree that the provision of the second indemnification clause does not have the specific issues of negligence.
When you say the second one, you're referring to the one on Exhibit A?
I believe it's Exhibit A, yes, Your Honor. But I don't think Exhibit A is the only indemnification clause that affords Safeway its opportunity to recover its cost of defense under their breach of duty to defend.
What other provision allows them to recover their
Provision C, as well as provision...
What are the words in C that allows recovery of costs and attorney's fees for defending a claim against a third party?
It's the same language that was relied upon in Lafarge, Your Honor. Hold them harmless from against any all claims or causes of action of any sort.
Even though there was no claim against Safeway or cause of action against Safeway for attorney's fees, which is they incurred attorney's fees in defending claims or costs.
Safeway should be afforded the benefit of its bargain. To hold us harmless would mean that we would not have to pay attorney's fees. We don't have to pay for the ultimate liability to the underlying plaintiff.
Do you think the judge in awarding the attorney's fees was applying this paragraph?
I believe that the judge in awarding the attorney's fees was applying this paragraph in Exhibit C because it matches up to the provisions contained in the file.
Although you agree, he did cite this particular indemnification provision, as he did when he called the indemnification his on parking car.
I'm sorry, which order?
It's two different orders. In the identification order, he clearly talks about Exhibit C. In the attorney's fees award, he just says it's award under the contract. He didn't tell us which part of the contract.
The court did take the position that it was a shifting fees or a prevailing party, as opposed to an award under the contract. But I believe that they're applicable in both situations. If I may address quickly some additional issues, I believe that the argument that the contract was ambiguous is inaccurate. I believe the plain language, whether the power washing duties was included in the contract as additional services, was plain and clear. I believe the trial court found it was plain and clear, but was concerned that when you can request additional services without having some context, such as if Safeway were to ask parking car to perform additional services to do its taxes or its corporate SEC filings, there would probably be some concern that there was some overreaching in terms of the contract, which is why the court properly addressed it under indefiniteness. I also believe parking car's argument that the use of course of conduct being improper is not accurate. The course of conduct is undisputed, so there's no jury issue to be addressed. I also think
counsel for appellant says that Safeway is being held liable for, that Park Cart's being held liable for Safeway's leaking roof for which it had no responsibility. How do you respond to that in terms of the findings in this case?
You know, that was a guess by the court that they inferred. Ultimately, I believe that the jury found that Parking Cart created the dangerous condition, failed to properly salt the area, drove away, left it. They decided to spray water all over our sidewalk in January, a decision that they made. And the jury held them responsible for that. I think the jury held Safeway responsible for the fact that while it was in the process of freezing and becoming a hazardous condition, we had six employees walk over the area and not put a cone up. I don't believe that there was ever any determination that the water actually appeared from the roof.
Was there testimony that some of the ice, there were three experts in this case, as I understand it. Each one gave a different reason for why the ice was formed, but there was testimony by at least one expert, was there not?
No, Your Honor, there was testimony that there was a leak in our roof, and that occasionally that leak would cause ice to form in that area. There was no testimony that on that day the roof leaked, and there was no testimony that on that day that there was any additional precipitation that would have caused
the roof. Well, didn't Barkhart's expert say that some of the ice was caused by water leaking from Safeway's roof?
The expert certainly did opine that.
Right, and the jury could have believed that.
Certainly could have, and the jury certainly could have believed that Safeway failed to properly protect and warn under the premises liability statute and didn't actually cause the hazardous condition in the first place.
But there was no special interrogatory that would have separated.
And there shouldn't have been a special interrogatory. The special interrogatory was essentially created in order to create a vicarious liability. How did parking cart's actions cause Safeway to be liable? That's not the question under indemnification. The question under the indemnification provisions is, did you contribute or were you at fault in causing the plaintiff's injuries? And if so, then you're required to indemnify and hold Safeway harmless.
Did the jury have an opportunity here to find that the injury was caused by Safeway's sole negligence, which would have taken the park cart off the hook?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Based on the standard jury instructions, they're provided the comparative negligence questions, and the jury was asked to separate out what percentage of negligence they thought each party, if any, contributed to the plaintiff's injuries.
We could have put down Safeway, not 100%, I guess it would have been 95% given plaintiff's negligence.
They could have put down Safeway 95%, and they could have had Safeway 100% and plaintiff 0%, but they chose to put a percentage down in the parking card.
Thank you.
Your time is exhausted.
Thank you.
With my 45 seconds, I will say that the public service case, I believe the Lafarge case, deal with one specific indemnity clause, and that's the problem with this case. We have to understand the context of the contract. Public service didn't have separate titles to separate documents that were attached to each other that dealt with separate indemnification clauses. Public service didn't make any attempt to harmonize the two like this court didn't. When you look at things piecemeal, you can understand why the court did what it did, but you can't look at the contract piecemeal. What we have here is a Safeway, a large company, taking advantage of its poorly drafted contract in one section of the contract to hold a sweeping vendor liable for its leaking roof or other negligence. And the case law is clear. When you do that, when we accept that, it has to be clear and unequivocal. And the fact that we can't harmonize it in front of you right now today in a clear and unequivocal fashion means it was not. And therefore, we ask the court to grant the relief we requested in our appeal. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course. Counsel,